This is PW Torch via the editor Wade Keller with the Wade Keller Hotline, covering the Wednesday, April 30th, 2025 episode of AEW Dynamite. They were in Norfolk, Virginia, and had about 3,800 in the building, according to WrestleTix. They had it configured for about just over 4,000. They expanded the configuration as more tickets sold, which is pretty typical. The building can hold 9,500 for concerts, so they certainly, even with staging, you know, could have sold more. So not an awful crowd, pretty typical for AEW these days in the 3,000s. All right, so the announcers introduced the show as Pyroblast did, and then the advertised all-star eight-man tag team took place. Jason Powell and I on the flagship on Tuesday wondered who's more weird, Mark Briscoe, Speedball Mike Bailey, or Kenny Omega. You can listen to our discussion there and see who we settled on. Those three weirdos, and we say that affectionately. Remember, you know, Portland, Oregon says, keep Portland weird, and Austin says, keep Austin weird. It's sort of like nerd, word nerd. It's a term of endearment, of affection. But they all are weird in their own way. Anyway, they teamed with Kevin Knight, who seems pretty normal, and they took on the Young Bucks, Kazuchika Okada, and Ricochet. Omega came out fourth for his team and received a Kenny chant. Omega came out last for his team. A lot of anticipation for these two sharing the ring together in AEW. Omega and Okada went chest-to-chest and exchanged intense words before the bell, which rang 8 minutes into the show, and they started against each other. So it's like, whoa, maybe they're going to show off and do something special at the start. Fans chanted Kenny. But of course, Okada, playing the heel role he has played since he arrived in AEW, tagged out and smirked even before hooking up. Omega turned his back to also tag out. Like, I can't fight Okada. I don't want any part of this. And as he turned his back to make the tag, all four heels attacked him. Bad strategy on Omega's part. Omega tagged out to Speedball about 3 minutes in. The faces attacked Ricochet, Briscoe, and attacked Ricochet, and then Briscoe and Speedball landed some crane kicks on the Bucks in a semi-comedy spot as they cut to a double box break 6 minutes in. After landing a Northern Light suplexes on Speedball and Knight, Matt had his back to Ricochet, and Matt's hair covered Ricochet's bald head. So Ricochet kind of played with it like it was his, and it was sort of a comedy spot. The announcers commented on who he looked like with long hair. Omega tagged in 13 minutes in. Okada and Matt held Omega's boot as Nick superkicked him, and they cut to a partial double box break at the 15-minute mark with the heels in control. As Matt took it to Omega after the break, he yelled, "Damn, I'm good." Speedball rallied with kicks at the 21-minute mark. Okada took over and eyed Omega. Omega tagged in. They stared at each other. Another Kenny chant. I think there was a holy shit chant. They swung away at each other. Excalibur talked about their history and said they picked up where they left off at Osaka 2018. Omega set up a one-winged angel, but shifted into a snapdragon. Omega played to the crowd and then went for a V-trigger, but Okada dropkicked him. The Bucks landed stereo super kicks to Omega. All eight entered the ring. Nick and Ricochet leaped off the top rope and dropkicked the backs of Briscoe and Omega as Okada and Matt delivered tombstones. And then they senton splashed after the dropkick, so they basically dropped, onto Speedball and Knight, who were on their backs. It was a cool spot. I'd have to rewatch it to find anything to be critical of. Maybe I would, but it actually felt more realistic than some other moves that are pretty simple. I thought it was pretty creative. Ricochet came back with a running flip dive to ringside. Briscoe gave a J-driller to Okada. Ricochet broke up the cover at the 24-minute mark. Knight drop-kicked Ricochet off of Speedball's shoulders, and then Ricochet landed onto the Bucks at ringside. Omega then landed a running flip dive onto the crowd at ringside, and he played to the cheering fans. In the ring, Briscoe, meanwhile, gave Okada a Death Valley driver and set up a top rope move, but Ricochet interfered, shoved him off the top rope. Okada then caught Briscoe with a Rainmaker for the win. So Okada gets a pinfall, not shockingly on Briscoe, but interesting. They didn't have Speedball take the fall. Match went 26 minutes, and I mean, lots of action. You get the sense of it. It's exactly what you would expect it to be. I would say the only disappointing aspect is I don't think somebody who isn't an aficionado of, a super fan of, looks back fondly and romantically at Okada and Omega in the late teens would look at this and say, I gotta see those two in a singles match. It was played up by the announcers. The crowd reacted. The announcers did their part. It's not like it was nothing, but it wasn't like just electricity. That's unfortunate. You know, maybe that just won't happen. Then they cut backstage to the Hurt Syndicate. They were greeted by five people, I assume wrestlers, and they were singing We Hurt People. MVP said that's fun to say, but even better to do to people. And they attacked the five guys. Shelton Benjamin told Bobby Lashley that he was skeptical of MJF, but he trusts MVP. He said, MJF is funny, and I know you like that car. Lashley said, I can buy that car myself. Glad they covered that base. MVP said he's owned two cars like that before. MVP said MJF can be beneficial to them, though. Have I ever steered you wrong before, he asked. He told them if MJF screws him over, they can hurt him like he's never been hurt before. So MVP's just going, yeah, I might not be trustworthy, but the threat of an attack from Shelton and Bobby and MVP should keep him in line. And hey, you can look forward to him not being loyal, because then you get to beat him up. Who wouldn't want to beat up MJF with justification? Anyway, the selling for the attack by the five people singing was cartoonish and over the top. Like, it was kind of like almost slapstick. One guy ended up dropped in a rolling like laundry cart. Another guy, and he like leaped into the air. Like, it was clear he was like taking Shawn Michaels bumps for Hulk Hogan, that kind of thing. Just, I don't know. You're not meant to take the attack seriously. It was meant to be a haha entertaining knee slapping moment, but Hurt Syndicate should be a serious act, I think. Anyway, I do like what came next. His viewers are shown the continued evolution of Shelton and Bobby, warming up to MJF, being in the group, with MVP assuring them there will be consequences if MJF betrays him and them. After the break, Samoa Joe and Katsuyori Shibata and Powerhouse Hobbs, the Ops, took on Nick Comoroto, Rhett Titus, and Miles Hawkins. They should be called Team AEW Dark. Joe took it to Titus with a barrage of rapid-fire jabs. Taz said Hook continued to recover from the attack by the Death Riders, and he'll take care of business when the time is right. Hobbs finished off Hawkins with a spine buster, only went about 3 minutes. The match was there to set up the post-match. John Moxley, Wheeler Yuta, and Claudio Castagnoli attacked the Ops as they were celebrating their win. Joe and Mox fought up the ramp. Joe put Mox in a sleeper, but Joe let go to run to the ring to try to save Shibata from a slam onto a chair in the ring. It was kind of set up where he got slammed onto the bar. Joe was too late. Heels slammed him on the chair, and then the heels fled. Joe called for a mic to be handed to him, and it was. He said Mox likes to act like a boss, but he more often looks like a little bitch. So we got to reset the bitch-o-meter. It's happening less often lately, and it's probably fine. Joe and Swerve, I think, can get away with doing it, but not too often, without it just feeling like, you know, they're, you know, shooting spitballs when the teacher's not looking. You know, like, look what we can get away with. It doesn't, you know, feels more authentic with them. He suggested their title match take place inside a steel cage, and the fans liked that. They cheered. Renee Paquette conducted a sit-down interview with Mercedes Moné. Renee asked about her global mission. Renee showed off her various title belts. Mercedes showed off her title belts. She said the Hart family is special to her, but the own tournament isn't about the Hart family. It's about her. She touted being undefeated in singles action, and Renee said, yes, you're 25-0 in singles matches in AEW. She took a dig at Jamie Hayter for having a Scooby-Doo style. She said, a champion cannot wrestle like a cartoon. Interesting. So anyway, I mean, it wasn't, you know, it's Mercedes. It's not great, but it was on the top third of her mic work in AEW, but still just sort of, you know, just okay. After the break, Renee interviewed Christian Cage, Nick Wayne, Mother Wayne, and Kip Sabian backstage. Renee asked Nick what it meant to represent AEW New Japan. Christian said he'd appreciate all questions being directed at him, kind of being bossy or trying to be the alpha. Jay Lethal walked in before the tension could get too high between Nick and Christian. Jay told Nick he is young and has a lot to learn and a lot to prove, and he challenged him to a match later. Nick said he's not warmed up, and really he's focused on the best of the Super Juniors. Christian accepted on Nick's behalf. Nick looked perturbed. Christian told him to get his head in the game. As Tony Storm made her entrance, they threw to a video package previewing the match, including clips of Storm at the TCM Film Festival, and also clips of her opponent, Miyu Yamashita. And Excalibur said Storm seemed to be on edge. The bell rang 59 minutes into the hour, so the match continues into hour two. Storm went on a hip attack against Miyu, but Miyu moved. Miyu then kicked Storm in the rear several times. Luther intervened, so Miyu kicked him in the leg, I think, in the thigh, and then delivered a hard round kick to Storm. And they cut to a double box break about 3 minutes in. Storm made a comeback at the seven-minute mark. Miyu avoided a hip attack and landed a spinning hook kick. Storm ducked a back elbow and landed a sit-out powerbomb for a two-count. They battled back and forth. Storm landed a hip attack in the corner and a pile driver for a three count. So, Storm the winner in 10 minutes. Mercedes walked out afterwards with mic in hand. She told everyone to shut up and say hello to their CEO. She said after she beats Hayter at Double or Nothing, she's coming for her AEW Women's Championship. Hayter then marched out to her music and went after Mercedes. Mercedes ducked and fled to the back in her high heels. And then Hayter nodded at Storm. And I'm glad they didn't make it seem like it's just fait accompli that it's going to be Mercedes winning this tournament. You got to give some TV time to Hayter, equal time, basically, and tease both possibilities for the finals. And so, or both possibilities for who would win in the finals to face Storm. Backstage, Don Callis said he likes making history. And he pointed at Konosuke Takeshita and Josh Alexander, who was standing next to him. And he said they made history when they had one of the greatest tag team matches he's ever seen in defeating Will Ospreay and Brody King last week. He said they'll make history again this week because Kyle Fletcher will dismantle Hangman. Fletcher smiled as he wrapped his wrist. Fletcher said he will beat Hangman tonight, and then he'll beat Ospreay at Double or Nothing. And then he'll go on to be world champion. Callis cackled like an evil villain as he patted Fletcher. The Hurt Syndicate made their way to the ring. MVP announced from the ring that he had an announcement. He said according to their corporate bylaws, any prospect to join them must get a unanimous thumbs up. He said they're going to vote one more time. MJF came out to be present for the voting. A fan held up a sign behind MJF that said, I'm only 9, but even I know MJF sucks. MJF said nice things about Shelton and MJF and then turned to Lashley. Things got tense, so MVP said they should just get to the vote. MVP gave a thumbs up. Shelton gave a thumbs up. Lashley held his thumb up sideways, or held it sideways, and teased tilting it up and down, and finally tilted it down after really milking the moment. MJF closed his eyes in dismay. MJF said, you know what, Bob? I'm about sick of your shit. What is it exactly that you want? He said that he's given him women, money, and cars, and he helped him win a match. He offered Rogaine. Lashley shoved MJF into the corner and said if he wants to impress him, he should hurt someone. MJF cried out that he made his point, really begging off in a cowardly way. Lashley let go and backed away. MVP tried to calm him down, and Shelton and Bobby left the ring. MVP looked apologetically over at MJF before leaving the ring and following behind Shelton and Bobby. So, this is not over yet, but we have the next stage established. MJF has to impress Bobby Lashley now. So, you know, MJF used to give challenges to others in order to get a match against him. Now, he's getting basically that version of it, a little less formal. But Lashley's going, you got to jump through some hoops to impress me. So, we'll see who the victim is. I assume it'll be an official match, but it also could just be MJF attacking someone. Although the problem is, you know what? Lashley, who's essentially in a babyface faction, to be basically putting a bounty on some poor person's head, you know, and then reward MJF for beating up some innocent bystander or somebody who doesn't deserve the beatdown. So I could see MJF beating some scrub and then Lashley going, that doesn't count. That's just a scrub. You know, beat somebody tough. So I don't know. We'll see. I don't think this is dragging on too much. I think it's just a fun hook week after week, and they've moved it along every week, and the acting is good and believable enough. You know, MVP is loyal to MJF, but he's not going to be pushy with Shelton and Bobby, who are their own people. Shelton thinks they can manage it and is okay with it, and Bobby lost his temper here, but I also feel like Bobby just sort of is enjoying seeing MJF beg and get frustrated. He didn't like him calling him Bob and saying he's sick of his shit. And I think Lashley then is like, all right, you know, I'm going to make you jump through some hoops. All right, they cut to the announcers at ringside. Tess said Lashley lost his cool. He said he feels MJF is a different type of destructive force and he can go in the ring. And it almost like, I don't know if Tony Khan told him on headset, put MJF over. He looks so weak. He's our former world champion, a main event guy, top paid guy. We don't want him to look so weak. So put him over, you know, Taz, talk about how tough and how formidable he is. Cause MJF, in order to con his way into Shelton and Lashley, is having to play a very kind of subservient, role to them. Like he's coming across as, you know, just weak. And, you know, you don't want him damaged on the road to this. Now, it is part of the manipulation game. It's not who he really is, although Bobby cornering him did feel kind of real. All right, a video package aired on FTR joining up with Stokely Hathaway and then Nick Wayne with Christian, Kip Sabian, and Mother Wayne took on Jay Lethal in an ROH TV title match. As Nick came out to his music, Christian's music took over. So again, he's trying to be the alpha, and he escorted Nick down the aisle. The bell rang 25 minutes into the hour. Nick dropped to ringside at the start. Lethal took over in the ring. Nick threw Lethal into the ringside steps at the 3-minute mark and then played to the crowd, and they cut to a break. Nick eventually landed a fisherman's buster for a clean win, sort of out of nowhere, which is fine. Excalibur called it an impressive performance from Wayne. Christian then insisted on putting the belt around Nick's waist. So Nick Wayne the winner in 9 minutes. Good match. You know, I mean, it's a Jay Lethal match, but Nick Wayne was the good kind of, again, go back to the heel Lightning Kid in Global Wrestling Federation 30-some years ago. I mean, it's just that punk you want to see get beat up, and he uses tricks and evasive techniques, gloats when he gets a little bit of offense, but he does seem tough also, and it's believable he beat Jay, and it's actually, in a weird way, kind of a good win for Nick Wayne. Not that Jay Lethal's been super protected, but having him, you know, just win, I think is good. Excalibur said they have breaking news about Beach Break in 2 weeks. It will be a cage match between Mox and Joe. They also showed the brackets at the own tournament before hyping the main event. So Kyle Fletcher with Don Callis and Lance Archer took on Hangman Adam Page. Fletcher came out first. When Hangman entered the ring, they had a forehead-to-forehead intense stare down. The bell rang 40 minutes into the hour. Shivani said Fletcher was playing chess when he stalled at ringside at the two-minute mark. When Callis said that Hangman can't even spell chess, Taz said he must have better material than that after all these years in the business. So Taz, rightfully so, calling out Callis for a pretty lame cliche. I mean, like, maybe in 1984, that might have been a slightly clever line from, like, Bobby Heenan or something. Although I think Bobby was even probably above that. But anyway, kind of fun seeing Taz give Callis a hard time. So Fletcher rode Hangman like a cowboy in a mocking fashion. Hangman didn't like that. He dropped him to the mat and spanked him. Fletcher ate a boot to the face, but rolled out of the ring to avoid a buckshot. Hangman clotheslined him into the timekeeper's area, and then they cut to a double box break. Hangman got in sustained offense. Fletcher bled from his lower back. He had some kind of contusion that kept bleeding. Nothing too gory, but it was present and visible, noticeable. Hangman kipped up and landed a leaping lariat, knocking Fletcher off the ring apron. Fletcher came back with a brainbuster suplex off of Hangman onto the ring apron. Both then crashed to the floor and were slow to get up. They battled onto the ledge of the ringside barricade. Hangman kicked Fletcher to ringside and then landed a leaping moonsault, followed by a tombstone at ringside, and they cut to another double box break. Both were down and slow to get up during the break. Hangman took control in the ring and landed a superplex as they returned from the break to full screen. Fletcher landed a surprise half and half, but Hangman fired back with a leaping sit-out powerbomb for a two count. Shivani said, back and forth it goes. Hangman landed a dead eye for a two count at the 19-minute mark. Hangman climbed to the top rope, but Fletcher lifted his knees as Hangman went for a moonsault. Fletcher then delivered a sit-out powerbomb for a two count. They went into the overrun. Fletcher went for a suplex on the ring apron, but Hangman countered into a dead eye. He then landed a leaping moonsault onto him at ringside before throwing him back into the ring. He went for a buckshot, but Fletcher shoved the ref, delivered a low kick, and then a brainbuster suplex for a dramatic nearfall. Fletcher went bug-eyed, couldn't believe that Hangman kicked out. Hangman then landed a buckshot out of the corner off the second rope, and then a traditional buckshot for the win. So Hangman advances, but they added some drama to this one. Went 24 minutes, very good match. Overall, pretty basic show structurally and in execution, but it forwarded some storylines. It established the Owens final and hyped upcoming big matches at future shows. It was solid start to finish. That opening match isn't for everybody, but it is part of AEW's original branding, is tune in and see a wild spot fest start off the night. I think with WWE really reducing the amount of minutes of wrestling lately, I know it's WrestleMania season and that's part of the reason, but AEW has an opening to kind of get back to wrestling being their thing, you know, good long wrestling matches. And now, you don't want to do that at the expense of character building and protecting titles and telling stories and having good promos and all of that. You still have to do all that, but I think you can, if you bookend, a show like this with, you know, a good, highly athletic 8-man tag and then a really intense, good 24-minute match with stakes, and then you put some decent stuff in the middle, I think it's AEW's winning formula as a challenger brand. And then the key is just, you know, get the talent over. It's not just about good wrestling. Like, you can't grow as a company or compete with WWE if your mantra is our wrestling is better. You also need fans to believe that those wrestlers who are better are stars and you want to pay to see them in person. And you got to tell good stories and have titles that matter. So there's more work to do, but it does feel like there's a little bit more of an opening for AEW than there has been in a while, given some of the issues with WWE booking going into and even coming out of WrestleMania. All right, that'll do it for me for today. Thanks, everybody, for your continued support. And until next time, Wade Keller signing off.